Congratulations, you are tuned into the number one podcast where life has no limits. Your host, Joan Kaler, is the founder of Joan Kaler Counseling and Consulting International. Joan consults with clients around the world to help them reach their full potential with emotional freedom techniques, chakra balancing, and cognitive behavior therapy. Joan is a sought-after speaker, trainer, and consultant. Now, here is Joan.
All right. Hello, everyone. I will be bringing Christina in to talk about her journey. I am past excited. Just to give you a little introduction, I have known Christina Pearson for, this is 2019. I met her, I believe, in 1990. So it's been 29 years. I do not need to read a script about Christina. She is the light of the world. She is my dearest, dearest friend and soul sister. She's the reason I stopped pulling. She is the founder of TLC back when it first started in 1991, the Trichotillomania Learning Center. I met Christina when we first served on the board of directors of the International Obsessive Compulsive Disorder Foundation. We were the only two hair pullers, tricksters on the board, I think, until she started TLC, and then TLC took over as the spokes foundation nonprofit for people with body-focused repetitive behaviors. But wow, what an experience. And we have been soul sisters ever since.
Hello.
Welcome in, Christina Pearson. Oh my gosh, and I am just going to make sure that I am live on my Facebook page. Please, community, ask us questions. Please, please, please. I'm getting the hang of this now. So I really want to hear from you all as to what questions you have for Christina, okay? Okay, and I am just going to make sure that I pull everybody up here so I can see what's going on. Okay, here I am. So, let's see. All right. Carrie is joining us. Terrific. Keep it coming. Keep it coming, world. So, as I mentioned in my introduction, I've known Christina for, feels like forever, 29 years. I think we met in 1990?
We met in 19. You were not at the AABC meeting. No. So hold on. We might have met at the beginning of 1991, but otherwise it was the end of 1990.
Right.
Before right in there.
Right in there. Oh, cool. Okay. I'm not supposed to look at my phone because I want to keep my eye on thing. Chris Carey says, hi from Colorado.
Let me just find my phone and turn it off. You know.
World sees a new venue today. I'm at my home office today, so I'm excited.
Okay, I got it.
I want to ask Christina, and she's going to talk to us about, she's had experience, not experience, she embodies love, she embodies recovery. Her 30-year journey as the creator, not just a member of our community, but the creator of our community, bringing us all together. We wouldn't be where we are today without Christina. I wouldn't have whatever this is. I wouldn't have hair if it wasn't for Christina. Millions and gazillions of people around the world would not be in recovery. And by recovery, I don't necessarily mean whether you stop pulling, biting, picking, whatever the case may be. I mean acceptance, living a better quality of life, dropping the shame, dropping the isolation, dropping the depression, all the mood, all the negativity that goes along with body-focused repetitive behaviors. None of us would be where we are today. And for the young people just coming up, take a good look. This is Mother Earth. This is your leader. This is why we are. Oh, look at Mr. Turtle. So I'm going to be quiet. I know. What a concept. And let Christina talk about what she's doing now. Okay, so I said it was going to be quiet. Well, okay, so she started TLC. Then she started Heart and Soul Academy. And now we're going to hear from her as to what she's doing.
Thanks, Joan. It is a true honor to be here. And for those of you who watch now or in the future, thank you for showing up for yourself, for the truth of your experience. That's what it took for me. Let me start with the tail. This is my new puppet.
Aww.
The tortoise. But the tail of the hare and the turtle. And they were racing, and the hare, or type of rabbit, was really pushing the turtle, saying, "Oh, I'll beat you anytime. I'll beat you anytime." Turtle said, "Okay, okay." Anyway, so I don't know the original language, but they set out on a race, and the hare got so close to the finish line, he said, "Oh, I can take a nap because turtle will never make it." So he takes a nap, and turtle is just plodding along. And turtle passes the sleeping rabbit, and he wins the race. And the moral here for me is that coming back to basics, I think of myself more as a turtle than a hare. I don't need to get everything done fast the way our culture is asking us to. That's not actually in time with all of nature and the universe. So for me, my own recovery has been about coming back to basics over and over and over again, plodding, plodding, plodding. And today I have 27, 28. See, this is all mine. And I did go for, I pulled my hair for 22 years, and I was at the end, when I first found out there were other people, I was missing some 45% of my scalp hair. It's very thin on top, and frankly, I don't give a damn because I'm like, yeah, I got some, no problem. And I also picked my skin severely. So I started pulling at 12. I started skin picking at 15, and that became voraciously a big part of my behavioral mechanisms for coping with a world that was really difficult for me in so many ways. I'm not going to get into that. What I will say is that in 1990, I had a spiritual vision, and it was the result of horrible pain and tremendous grace. And in that vision, I saw something so beautiful that is being aborning is the word I want to use, a kind of unfolding. And it has to do with our human systems, our human nervous systems. It has to do with the particular sensitivity of people with these types of behavioral, body-focused, repetitive behaviors that are not done for total mutilation or incredible levels of pain. That's another issue. It never caused me pain. It always caused me maybe a little bit here and there, but mostly it was comforting. And when I got to the place where I began to look at, oh my God, there are other people and maybe there's a way to get well. Well, I went and talked to all the doctors I could find, and I found that nobody was able to tell me how to really do this in a way that my inner self was cohesive with my outer self. And so I said to myself one day, okay, got these great docs putting together a scientific advisory board. Hundreds and hundreds of people are calling, and I'm pulling my hair out like mad and spending 2 hours in the bathroom picking my face. So I guess I'm just going to have to learn this myself from the inside out. And it was explained to me later that I kind of stumbled into what is called natural dharma. usually to become very mindful, it takes either a teacher, a specific type of teacher to help you with raising awareness, or it takes certain types of passion, like maybe mountain climbing, rock climbing, because you must be present, really present in those moments, or you fall. You start thinking about yesterday and boom. So I stumbled into this moment-to-moment awareness of what was going on. And I discovered much. I still am. And that's the truth, which is we don't get well and then move on. We're always getting weller. Somebody said to me, oh, you're not as well as you think you are. I said, I never said I was well. I never said I was well. I'm weller than I was. And I know how to keep the hair on my head. I also know how to keep myself from using implements or my fingers to tear at my skin. And so that began this huge journey. I did set up the Trichotillomania Learning Center. It is today called the TLC Foundation for BFRBs. And yeah, it's all very seminal. But I knew when I started it that I would be leaving. I knew I would have a second career. I didn't know what it would be, but I did know it was important. And probably the most painful event of my life was leaving TLC. It was my baby, my being. I threw my every bit of me into it. And that's what it took to kind of, what's the word? Begin the process, because I knew in the beginning, I was like, oh my God, we're up against a glacial public denial system. And so it'll take at least one human generation to begin to make a change. So I said, okay, I'll give it 20 years and then I'll reevaluate. What I didn't know was the incredible heartbreaking rendering that had to happen for me to move away from what I loved so much. But as a result of that, I've once again learned it is through our fracturing that allows the light to come in all the spectrum of the rainbow.
It is. That's so beautiful.
Because, and so whatever pain we experience, whatever frustrations, it's all part of this process of kind of the human developmental system of reaching certain limits and then having that shattered and realizing that there is that which is within that is coming forth. And so this is what I want to say. Probably the most important message I have is think outside the box. Do not assume that you know what recovery looks like, because you don't. If you don't have it, you don't know it. So what you do is you throw out all your ideas of, you know, what people say or what you think, and you open yourself to being willing to possibly look at different perspectives. And what I found, if I told people when they first came to me for change, for, I want to stop pulling my hair, I'll do anything to stop picking my skin. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Because we're very invested in what we know. And that's okay. That's part of, again, who we are. But I do want to tell you, we do recover. And recovery is about meeting life on life's terms. It's about learning about the incredible sensitivities of your nervous system and how to manage that as you navigate life. And there is no one single answer. There are many things that have helped me, but the bottom line is showing up moment to moment, being present for what is happening in my nervous system, and having the ability to make choices based on the fact that my insides are moving slow enough to just be present. If something arises, I question it. What do I need to do? Let's see. Okay, so that's my kind of intro. What I'm doing today, I'm writing two books. I'm writing a book about my experience of what it's like to be an eighth grade dropout, recovering drug addict and alcoholic, and to set up and to then set out to, challenge. Nobody wanted to hear about these disorders. When I told my friends I was leaving my little business and setting up this thing, they thought I was crazy. So, but the good news is today, TLC is going strong. It is doing what it was meant to do, which is to be a resource. But I left because business as usual doesn't work for me. I'm much more interested in what is the dynamic of real recovery and how do we make it happen? Because what I see is there are many tools, there are many things. And don't tell me you've tried them all because you haven't.
Amen.
If you had tried them all, you'd still be trying and you'd barely have started. There's so much. So get over it. Just get over it. Get real. And here's the thing about BFRBs. For me personally, they're a symptom of deep distress, but it's bigger than any one of us personally. It's truly a sign of a species under duress. We're the only species on the planet that's like out of sync with the biosphere, okay? We're like clueless, or we have been, but now we're starting to wake up a little bit. It is a huge energetic thing. I was reading this morning about the Van Allen belts, which are the bunch of electrons and whatever things out, these radiation belts around our planet, and they're around different planets too. And somebody was talking about, well, let's get rid of them. And I'm like, why? Mm-hmm. So let us look to nature, to the inherent state of creation itself for answers. And the human mind is just a wonderful gift, but logic is not the answer. The human heart is a wonderful gift, allowing us this range of emotions that I used to not be able to even feel because they were too deadly. I thought they would kill me. I know I'm going on and on. I'm almost done.
No. Your wisdom is for the world. Go.
Well, remember the turtle. That's my, I love him. Anyway, the point is, if you really want to change your behavior, you must step into the unknown. Unknown. Because if you just do what you've always done, you will do what you've always done, is something like that. Mm-hmm. So you have to literally be willing. And the first thing I ask people, my private students and my classes, is you need to be willing to be uncomfortable, for real. You need to feel. Because you, as we grow, we go through phases where we hurt like hell and everything is mucked up and, oh my God. So my early prayer was, because I had seen this beauty, the possibility of these nervous systems and the gift that is being, I guess evolutionarily, it's something to do with development, but I don't have a clear picture of it. But I tell you what, I do know that every time I grow or have a deep insight, it's usually the result of having walked through some pretty murky waters. So I began my session of recovery with, I pray for the willingness to be uncomfortable, because I know that's what it takes to get out of the trap that I'm in, the facade that I lived for so many years, feeling like I couldn't be real, because if I was real, you would know how disgusting I truly was. And what I found out is that in itself is just a facade, because under that is cohesion with the whole universe. And don't ask me to define that, but okay, let me think. So I'm writing these books. One is a workbook, Mindfulness-Based Impulse Reduction. That's the workbook. And that's kind of based on a lot of the work that I've been doing and my own insights, and also studying other mindfulness teachers and, from all different faiths and points of view. And me, I don't align myself with any particular belief system or point of view or religion. I don't need to, because I'm me, just me. And that's a little drop of the universe embodied for a moment. And, okay, what does real recovery look like? Do you have a question, Joan?
To you just like all our listeners and viewers right now. Do I have a question? Oh, golly, Ned. When we take a pause and take a breath and allow ourselves to feel.
You think about that. I have a story for everyone.
Okay.
A story is about feelings. Mm-hmm. When I was young, I had no idea that my emotional intensity might be far greater than everyone around me. I didn't know. All I knew is that some feelings, when they came in, they were going to kill me. It was so over. And of course, you know, as a little person, you don't have a clue. So I kind of shut those down out of necessity. And BFRBs have a lot to do with the regulation of emotive states in the nervous system that we're not able. I remember 1991, a newspaper interviewed me. And I said to the reporter, I said, well, she says, what are these? What is hair pulling? I said, actually, it's a physiological translation of a neuroemotive charge.
Whoa, a physiological translation
of a neuroemotive charge, and which has to do with the developing nervous system and how wonderful the human system is in terms of adapting and co-opting and moving where it needs to survive. And I just go on for hours. Oh, my God. So a couple of things.
Do you want me to take a question?
Oh, yes, sure. Anything.
Talia asks, do you believe there is a nutritional and physiological element to BFRB for some? Well, I would say absolutely positively.
If you don't count the body, you're really nuts. And I'll tell you why. Because we're body-based. We are humans. We are, perhaps, I don't know, but I live within this vehicle, my human body. And without the appropriate care, without finding out what works best for me, I'm not going to operate at my highest level or anywhere near it. So, yes, there's always a biological component, whether it's in your nutritional intake, whether it's in the chemistry of your brain, whether it's in the air that you breathe, the environment that you're in, all of these things matter. Nothing stands alone, nothing whatsoever. So yes, I do know that there's been a fair amount of, let's call it, what's the word, anecdotal. See, mm-hmm. Here's the other thing about research. God, so frustrating. And this is why. Until we actually have real cures, and there's going to be a bunch of them, trust me, because you don't just have one thing and it fixes everyone. Right. But this is what I have to say about research. I set up the first research in the world on trichotillomania. Well, actually, it was second. But there were a few little things before us. But I also know that we have to keep investigating the areas where there is no research, because there are things there that work. And take me, for instance. So if we don't consistently try and adapt and utilize all these tools, our biology, the energetic spheres of our body. Oh my God, talk about Van Allen belts. You've got this energy circuit in the human body that you mess around with that, it doesn't, you don't operate that well. So energetics. And for me, the basis of all of this is about waking up. It's about realizing that as human beings, we are, there's a bell being rung. It says, wake up, step into yourself, be who you really are, and get effing busy.
Here's an interesting comment. Courtney says, I wish my trichotillomania would just go away. Now, Courtney, if you were my client, this is what I would say to you. Trich is trying to teach you something. It's not going to go away until you do what Christina and I so believe in, which is getting your life in balance, getting present, feeling negative emotions. And what is Trick trying to teach you? When I was pulling, because I pulled from age 11 to age 36, and I, just like our community, I felt ashamed, isolated, hopeless, depressed. Why is this happening to me? And I would cry buckets as I pulled and had piles of hair all over the place, had to wear wigs, and I thought, why? If I knew 50 years ago what I know now, I would have documented all this. Who knew? And I know Christina can speak to this. Who knew I'd be famous for pulling out my hair? But now I know why I had trichotillomania. I could learn from it and give back and help others find their balance in life, find out what they are supposed to learn, find out what recovery means for them, whether or not you have hair. So no, the trichotillomania is not just poof, going to go away. It is a response of your nervous system that something is out of whack in your life. What are you willing to do about it? Okay, boom, Christina.
You okay, of course I have to jump in. I'm like to my big. Oh. If I told people, when people come to me and say, I'll do anything to stop pulling and picking, I can't tell them the truth because they'll run screaming. The recovery process is about facing our fears. It's about facing the fact that, here's what I realized. Early on, I was like, oh my God, so you mean all the shame I have and everything is basically a fear of other people's judgment? Because if I was alone on a desert island pulling my hair, why would I care? Maybe I would just love it. I don't know. Probably would. But I realized that my hair pulling and my skin picking was stealing from me. It was keeping me in a holding pattern that was stultifying spiritually and by a lot, and physically too, all the rest of it, you know, fear of exposure and all those things. But what really changed for me was when I recognized that as a recovering drug addict and alcoholic, and I'll just tell you this, in my 20s, I used to drink a lot of gin. I would drink straight out of the bottle because I discovered that if I would knock myself out, not just black out, because then you might do something weird, but knock myself out, I didn't pull or pick. And so I would drink copious amounts to go to sleep, to, you know, and that set off a whole bunch of problems. But the bottom line was that was all an attempt to feel better, to not be controlled by the demons of this behavioral prison that I was trapped in, and I wanted out. So, yeah, we wish it would just go away. But it's important for us to take a good look at what I did, I kind of said, okay, God, universe, whatever you are, that which is greater than me, I have this life and it's a gift. I do know it's a gift. And who am I to reject any particular part of it? And who am I to say in what form I will receive help? That's very grandiose. So I had to get kind of real about, this is my life. I pull my hair. I don't want to hide anymore. And that's when I started talking and boom, the whole world changed. Mm-hmm. But we're still at the very beginning.
Yep. When I listened to my calling, when God spoke to me and said, you need to go back to graduate school. You need to, when I listened to what divine love wanted me to do, when I met other people and realized that I was a whole being in and of myself, when I found our community, mm-hmm. that's when I started.
That's the other thing. I don't see BFRBs as a pathology, as an illness. I see it as an adaptive coping mechanism of a highly sensitive nervous system to deal with a effing crazy environment. And on many levels. One, I have never met 100% well family. Don't tell me there is one, because I've never seen it. Mm-hmm. I've been around the world. Mm-hmm. That's okay. That's part of our homework. It's everybody has issues. The problem here is that you've got two things going on. You've got, as an individual, I need to recover, to come out and state my comfort with the realities of what I have done, what I am, where I'm going. And that's very scary, because our culture wants us the cultural patterns, our societal patterns, become like a big wheel that just kind of goes, and we get born and think, oh, I'm just supposed to get on this wheel, but why doesn't it feel right? What's wrong with this? I feel like an alien, and yet I'm here with everybody. I used to look out my apartment window when I was about 8 in New York City and cry to the stars, why did you leave me here? Why did you leave me here? Oh. But so if you ever felt like you didn't belong, good. Because the truth is, sometimes that's what it takes for us to look a little deeper. And so BFRBs operate on multiple levels, on an individual level, and it also has a lot to do with, I had to understand that I couldn't let other people's judgment scare me into retreating from trying to find myself yes. as a being. And there's, you got some, you know, the biggest problem that I see . If a child doesn't know how to read, does that mean they can't read? No. It means they need to be taught how to read. Most of our human information passes through teaching, through lineage of information, transfer of information through the ages. The bottom line is that if we could, when I hear of a child with hair pulling, skin picking, nail biting, cheek biting, tongue twisting, all these kinds of things that are kind of BFRB-ish, I know it's both a blessing and a curse. Mm-hmm. It's a blessing because their nervous system has great potential and is very sensitive and must be recognized and dealt with in a way that meets that neural need. On the other hand, it's a curse because we're still so effing early in the whole process of like acknowledging that there's something other than the body, like hello. And this is where my break with TLC really is that I wanted to continue to investigate these deeper realms because it is where I have found freedom. Mm-hmm. And I have seen many people attain wondrous states of being simply by changing the vantage point of their perspective and treating themselves a little differently. So
beautiful. I want to acknowledge some of the conversation that we're having within our community. So Addison says, I have noticed that after I opened up about my hair pulling, that my pulling significantly decreased. Yes. And oh, yes, Addison. And then Courtney is commenting, yes, it's a coping mechanism. Oh, dear Courtney, drinking does help me escape. So let's drink some herbal tea. I hope you're saying, I don't think you are, but I hope you
will. And here's the thing.
Yep.
Here's the thing.
Yes,
Courtney's right. When I was a kid, I used to dream of getting home, reading my book, eating an apple, and pulling my hair, picking my skin. It was my way to take a little vacation without leaving my home, which was very chaotic. There was lots of love, but there was a lot of chaotic and mixed messages. And I didn't know what to do with that. But pulling my hair kind of evened it out for me. But then, of course, I had to then deal with all the social judgment and blah, blah, blah. So, Courtney, you're spot on. But underneath all this is a part of you that wants to feel comfortable in your own skin, that wants to feel like you can be in any situation and be honest, be real. That's all.
No, absolutely. She asked one more question that I do want to address. How can I go forward when my own father is so disgusted with it?
How old is this person, would you ask?
Okay, Courtney, how old are you? Send us a message on this one, dear heart.
Yes, please. I'll tell you why. It's not your father's responsibility. Your father and your mother are king and queen in the domain of the family. That is the way it is. But there comes a point where us as princesses and princes emerge from and set up our own kingdom. And at that point, we might listen to our parents because they have a lot of knowledge and information. And we, of course, honor our parents always. But it doesn't mean that they're right. And it also doesn't mean that I have to accommodate them because I am a grown-up human being and I live my life according to what works for me. Mm-hmm. And if my mother and father didn't like it, which they didn't at first, then I just had to do it anyway because I'm much more attached to the potential of humanity than I am to a dysfunctional family system. So there.
Say that again, please.
I am much more attached to the human potential of our own developing awareness and interconnectedness than I am to the dysfunctional family model. And I have worked with thousands and thousands of families and individuals. And what I've learned is that it's not your father's responsibility. Once you're a grown-up, once you hit like 20, your body stuff is your own. When you're still in the domain of a lot of parental care and supervision, then that's true. But you've got to understand, not everybody's going to like what their parents want them to do. If everybody did what their parents wanted them to do, we wouldn't have the world that we have today. You know, doesn't make sense. So dad is entitled to his perspectives, his feelings, absolutely, his logic. He is entitled to having a point of view and has the right to express it. But that doesn't mean you have to agree or follow those lines. That's all.
Yep.
And tell dad to call me. I'll set him up. You think I'm kidding?
No, I know you're not. I laugh, but no, yeah. Have dad call Christina. Oh my gosh. Do you want to?
Because here's the other thing. It's not Courtney, it's not your fault. The fact is, it started long before you, and it will end long after you if you have children. In other words, we have certain dispositions, genetic dispositions, that do come down through the archetypal family lines. And you cannot take full responsibility, and you cannot blame your parents for full responsibility, because it's a bigger dynamic than that. So that means that I had to look at, first, I was really angry at mom and dad. They messed me up. They screwed me over. All my problems are because of them. And then I had to step back from that and look at, oh, well, my mom didn't have such a wonderful upbringing, blah, blah, blah. And then I began to realize that it's this process of intergenerational attempts to become more aware, more in cohesion with what is happening. And for a while, humans kind of drifted off the path. We're starting to connect again. And I hope we do it before we do ourselves in.
There's another interesting comment. And what I want to tell everybody too is that after this summit with Christina is done, you're welcome to continue to post questions, because Christina and I will both, this is an ongoing thing. Whatever we don't answer live, continue to post questions, and we'll both give you our perspective. So whether it's now, or whether it's a week from now or a month from now, because this is going to be on my Facebook page forever and ever and ever, leave your questions, leave your comments, and we will do our very best to answer them. This is an organic process. I never thought I'd do it. God bless Facebook. So,
well, and the other thing is, I'm bad on Facebook, and I don't even know how to use Instagram.
Well, listen, what I'm going to do is, do you know when you're tagged on Facebook that I can?
Every now and then I look and see, but I don't know.
Well, then I will text you and say, go to Facebook. Because
oh, you can do that. But here's the thing. You can, I mostly interact with people who come on as my students.
Okay.
I take private students, and I teach an ongoing class in mindfulness-based impulse reduction.
Okay.
So if what I am saying resonates, you know, then please, I won't be posting classes for another month or two because I'm trying to finish writing. But you can always reach me at the Heart and Soul Academy.
.org.
And I would love you to, can you chat in the chat room? Can you put my cell phone number?
Sure.
Because you can always text me.
Okay. Christina brings up an excellent point, everybody, because both of us have private clients. With her wisdom and life experience and everything she knows, oh my gosh, I do consulting all over the world. So
I do consult in my backyard with the robins.
Well, I'll tell you, when you're our clients, I mean, you get 1,000% focus.
Which hopefully you get from any therapist, but I'm not a therapist.
Don't get excited about that.
That's very, very important.
No.
I'm a teacher.
With me, I'm 24 hours except from midnight to 7 a.m. when I have to get some sleep and my phone goes on the charger, but I am very available and present to anyone who works with me. All the people that I'm so blessed to know, all the people I'm so blessed to work with know that. So having said, yeah, and Joan at JoanKaler.com, JoanKaler.com. I mean, I'm all over the place. And I'm going to be posting, side vent here. I'm going to be posting some of my classes. Then tomorrow is my day when I'm going to be teaching another method to regulate your nervous system, which is emotional freedom techniques, how that is applied to BFRBs. Because going forward, I'm going to be working with one of the top researchers in the world on tapping. We're going to create a research protocol to get some real hard data on how tapping helps the BFRB community. So that's not going to be for another year or so, but regardless, it's in the making. Anyway, tomorrow I'm going to come forward and teach you my program, which is just one of the million ways to balance our nervous system. So Talia asks, okay, so having said all that, Talia asks, how do we view those times of pulling when zoning, while zoning out, watching TV, before sleep? Those are not stressful or chaotic moments, just the opposite. So Talia, from my point of view, that is your body processing your day. I mean, you get all the stimulation all day long, events, people, computers, electronic devices, phones, stimulation. When you have a moment of rest, your nervous system is going, bow, 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 bow. Where does all that stimulation go? That's what pulling and picking do. It releases the stimulation to get you back in balance and homeostasis. Okay, that's my perspective. Christina, what's your perspective?
Well, here's an interesting story. And I love stories. And I've moved into becoming a storyteller like Lynn Doiron. Hi, Lynn. The interesting thing is years ago, I heard on NPR, I was listening and they were talking about, some guy was talking about some research being done with an Aboriginal group, I believe in Australia, New Zealand, I don't know, the Maori. And there were, they had two Jeeps, or four or five guys, and they were following this nomadic tribe and they were staying, they stayed away. They didn't interfere at all. And the tribe knew they were there. But what happened was the researchers noticed that this tribe would sometimes stop. They might set up their tents. They might stop for 2 days or they might stop for half an hour. And it didn't make sense all the time because there might not be water, might not, you know. And so finally, the lead investigator got permission to speak to the guy that they had contact with in the community. And he said, well, we noticed you. Why are you stopping? The guy said, to let our souls catch up.
Oh.
We move so fast. You know, you're not your thoughts. Your thoughts happen. That's not really you, but we become so over-identified with the thinking process that that's all we think of is self, and it's so much faster. It's important to learn to rest. Psalms, come on, be still and know that I am God.
Oh.
This is the heartbeat that is calling us to get in tune with this, the source of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm off track.
Beautiful, getting back to source, yes.
So however you see it, and see, I'm not attached to any particular perspective, but I do honor every pathway to wakefulness, to lovingness, to a sense of union with that which is divine, which is real.
My perspective is when we connect with divine love, source, spirit, God, whatever that is for you. For me, when my connection is strong and when I listen, miracles happen for me. Doesn't mean that I don't go through stuff. Lord knows I go through stuff. Lord knows.
Totally. And here's the thing.
I've had a cracked heart many times.
What I've learned, Joan, is that just because we wake up a bit, some degree in our life about certain things, just because I have a more balanced body system, and just because I'm more in touch with it, doesn't mean that every day is going to be perfect.
Thank you.
I have better skills today to navigate life as life is. And I love what Jon Kabat-Zinn says, his quote, you cannot change the waves of life, or you, I think that's how it goes. You cannot change the waves of life, but you can learn to surf. And essentially, when we exist with awareness in the present moment, this is the point of all creation. It's not tomorrow, yesterday. It's all happening right now. So as Eckhart Tolle says, the point of power is in the present moment, is in now. And this is where life changes, not tomorrow.
Christina, you are such a precious gift. I just want to cry because I am so honored to bring you. I'm so honored to know you as a friend, love you as a soul sister, have you be in this summit, have the community have access to your wisdom. This thank you to my dear friends, and you know who you are out there, my teachers. I'm not going to name you by name, but thank you to my teachers who have taught me how to do this.
So I have one last little message.
Yes.
A wonderful friend of mine named Danielle, she gave me this little plaque. Mm-hmm. And it's a picture of a tree with a bird, okay? And what it says, what if I fall? Oh, but my darling, what if you fly?
What if you fly? I'm going to tap.
We have to take the risk.
Yes.
Of stepping into the what seems so fearful. And yet if we don't discover.
Oh, fear is terrifying. When having
Jack Godsman on Insight Timer. I recommend everybody listen to her podcast, Fear is Love. Plus also, what's her name? Anna Beretta. She has this great 8 Things Every Woman Should Know, and that's on Insight Timer, which is a free meditation app. You can put it on your phone. There's lots of things. So, yeah, Anna Beretta, she says in 30 minutes what I've been trying to say for 30 years. I'm like, ooh, those young guys, they're getting rowdy. So good. It's been a total pleasure.
Oh, my gosh. So it's okay to put your phone number in the – well
– Oh, my number –
Yes. You're okay with this because this is
yes, I'm okay with this. It's the best way to reach me.
Okay.
Right now, because I have 5 emails, but it's problematic. You can send an email to Christina, that's Christina, at Haas Academy. That's HAS, the word academy.org. HaasAcademy.org. My cell phone is 970-697-9677. And if you do contact me today, I have some things I have to do, so I might not get back to you till tomorrow.
And that is
but I would love to hear from anybody whose heart wants to investigate. And that's the last line. There's a beautiful line. I think it's a guy named Herman Spencer, but I'm not sure. And I'm not quoting it exactly, but it's at the end of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it says, criticism prior to investigation is ignorance. Don't judge what you have no information on. Find out. Investigate yourself. That's what the Buddha said. He said, don't do what I do. Investigate for yourself.
Investors. All right. Oh, love you. As they say in India, namaste. As they say in the Philippines, mabuhay, which means coming from the heart.
Oh, yeah. It's all about love.
Yeah. Wherever you are in our community, watching, listening, I'm going to make this into a podcast as well. I thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching, tuning in, asking questions, being a part.
And here's the thing. So much of our healing comes from interconnectedness. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Then the shame reduces. You begin to get, you know, I used to think I was the sickest person in the universe. And then I met others, put me in perspective mm-hmm. that I'm not the worst. I'm not the best.
Thank you.
Yes. So much for doing this.
Well, as soon as I learned how to do it in my other life, I thought, I can do that. I need to bring this to our community. So I learned, and here we are. And I will be, if anybody hopefully is coming to the TLC conference, I will be there. Please come over and introduce yourself to me. I will be there. Thank you, my love. Thank you so much for everything. I love you dearly. Oh, my gosh. Thank you, community. I love you, too. Bye-bye.
Contact Joan at joankaler.com for training, speaking, or consultation. Follow Joan on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Remember to share what you learned today with others, because there are no limits to what you can achieve.